and sniff, my scientist. Ain't it just swell how 10-year-old cheese demonstrates smell?
Welcome to Radio Free School.
We went to Redeemer College.
Mm-hmm.
We saw a sheep's brain, Daddy. Sheep's brain.
And we held a sheep's brain and a sheep heart.
And actually look at
yes, the and gloves, but I didn't touch it.
We opened up the heart.
How did it look in there?
Gross. Mom didn't even open it all, basically. But I saw in somebody else's one.
Me and Courtney tried, but it wasn't exactly very easy to open that one. We should have had dissection equipment, so we were just studying the different parts on the outside and comparing them with the picture, and comparing them with a note to see which ones were on a sheep, what's different between a sheep's heart and a human's heart. There was one thing on there that wasn't on the sheep heart, though.
Is that the natural colour, though? When it was all grey looking like that? Or is it the brain?
Well, I think it's just because it was dipped in that. It was in the preservative.
The heart stunk.
Really?
Yeah, I touched it with the gloves.
What else did you see?
And
a sheep heart for every two people.
Yes.
Me and Courtney were paired for that, and we listened to each other's hearts and wrote the timing down. It was really complicated that we kept getting it wrong and messing up. Courtney's heart, according to what our readings, beat 36 times every 10 seconds, and mine only beat 21 times every 10 seconds. It was funny. We were like...
Warriors eat the heart of their enemies sometimes.
I know. Also, warriors would eat the brains of their enemies to find out, because they thought that you could gain knowledge from from the enemy. I read it in a book. And my book, the best.
What if they were dumb?
Intelligence. Yeah, but find their knowledge for what their secret plans are in a war.
The funny thing is that some people eat brains of animals.
Ew.
It's
like monkey brains.
Delicacy, yeah.
Ew.
Monkey brains in Oriental. Can you tell by looking at it, are sheep smart?
Yeah.
I don't think so.
How do you know?
I don't think you can tell by looking at it. I think they're smart, but I think all animals have some intelligence, but it all varies.
It was just kind of fun because I have to study a lot. I love studying. Is it kind of your idea of what school is like?
It should be like that. I don't know what school's like. I'm homeschooled. Mm-hmm. Unschooled.
So you didn't think it was too long, though?
It should have been longer.
It could have been this course overnight. Sleep there.
Oh.
That'd be fun.
Boarding school?
Yeah. Just for at least a week.
Without your parents?
Yeah.
I like the brain thing more than the heart thing because there's more to do with the brain.
The stations.
Yeah, because there are the stations, six stations, to find out like, how you feel things, how you smell and stuff, how things taste, touch and all that, and then sight. My favorite one was where she was standing on one side and then you'd have to cover one eye. So first I covered my left eye and then she would come from the right side and I'd tell her as soon as I saw the shape and color of the thing she was holding, because she'd be holding a shape or a color. So then, and you find out which one you saw first. Most of the time I saw them at the same time. Well, I kind of want to learn more about the connections between different things and what you could be able to do. How you would be able to begin again if you lost a part of your brain.
Dreaming is the time for the brain to rest.
I believe dreaming occurs when you're kind of lightly asleep. When you're deep in sleep, you're not dreaming. And your eyes move a lot when you're dreaming.
Yeah.
With your eyelids closed. I can actually move my eyes with my eyelids closed and roll them like backwards and everything, roll them right around. What was your favorite station, Madeline?
The life save, because you got to eat the ice save.
Mine was...
Oh, I liked one of them a lot. It was the one where you had the sheet, the words, and you had to just say the color, not the word.
Yeah.
Like they'd write blue in big green letters. Instead of saying blue, you'd have to say green.
Yeah, it's kind of hard because I prefer to read. I'm not a very visual person.
But it would be easy for people that didn't know how to read.
Yeah,
you could just go say the color.
Mm-hmm. It's harder when you've actually learned more. Sure. It's harder to actually identify different things, even though you know the color. And I'm not very good with colors as much as with shape and stuff. So I prefer to read the thing rather than to see a show about it, for example. So I prefer to read a book rather than to see TV or a puppet show or something. I prefer to have written instructions rather than a map, so...
The Lifesaver Station was when you had to hold your nose and put a lifesaver in your mouth.
Cover your eyes.
And close your eyes and tell what flavor it was.
You didn't get yours right?
No, I didn't. And then she let me, with your nose helping, you were allowed to go of your nose and then tell, and I managed to tell then.
You also managed to tell
when you were holding the objects, right? You could tell what you were holding.
I thought I got all my objects. I messed up a little bit with the toothpick match. It really was fun.
Brahmin, what did you make?
A brain.
Okay. Can you remember the parts of the brain?
Cerebellum, brainstem, so on and so forth. Because I can't remember what the things that go all around are called.
So, what did you make a brain out of?
Plasticine.
The Senseless Lab of Professor Revere. Listen, my children, and you shall hear of how loud noises go in your ear. And look, my youngsters, bright lights will be the way to figure out how you see. And feel, my students, is that too much? With gopher guts, you learn about touch. And chew, my kiddies. Oh, what a waste. That frog eye stew was for you to taste. And sniff, my scientist. Ain't it just swell how 10-year-old cheese demonstrates smell? So, those are your senses. Class is done. Next week, diseases. Won't that be fun? Science Verse, John Sheska.
And illustrated by Lane Smith.
Cooked noodles, Calvin and Hobbes. I'll just give you an overview of it. Calvin has to do a 5-minute oral report at school, and he chooses to do the brain. He doesn't know anything about the brain. But he's like, I watched this movie about people who took this guy's brain, kept it alive in water, and then the brain got electrified and crawled out and terrorized the town. That's informative. So then he has to have a visual aid, so he shows Hobbes, here's my visual aid. I cooked some noodles and put them together in this paper bag. Doesn't it look like brains when they're all soggy? I said, doesn't it look like brains? Ugh. And then he's at school and he's like, my 5-minute oral report is on the brain. It's hard to explain all the nerves and complex systems of the brain, but it's just 5 minutes, but I'll do my best. To start, the brain is part of the central nervous system. Checks his watch. I'll give you a few minutes to write that down. Calvin! He didn't write very much report. He probably wrote a few sentences. Of course, Calvin got in trouble with his brain report.
What's the matter?
Miss Lucy had some matter. She didn't know its state. She only had 3 choices, so tried to get it straight. She thought it could be liquid, quite possibly a gas. And if it wasn't solid, well, call me sassafras. Miss Lucy called the plumber. Miss Lucy called the cop. Miss Lucy called the egghead with the perfectly bald top. Liquid, said the plumber. Solid, said the cop. Gas, said the egghead with the perfectly bald, perfectly bald, perfectly bald top, top, top.
You are listening to Radio Free School.
Book review.
Book review.
I want to tell you about a book. It's called Surviving the Applewhites by Stephanie Tolan, and it's about a super creative unschooling family in rural South Carolina who absolutely thrive in chaos, all except for one, Edie, who prefers order and structure to her homeschool. For the children of this family, it's self-directed learning, what unschooling is supposed to be, at its freest. Mayhem and disorder are part of the deal, but there is actually method to this madness, as Jake Temple finds out when he comes to live with the Applewhites. A spiked, crimson-haired, black-clothed, juvenile delinquent, sporting a studded collar and earrings, Jake is no innocent Rose, and has pulled some pretty creative stunts of his own, like burning down his last school in Rhodes Island. When Jake, who consequently gets sent to live with his grandfather and predictably gets thrown out from the high school there, Applewhite clan member and poet Aunt Lucille, who tends to have a pathologically sunny view of life, and who happens to teach at said high school, invites him to come to Wits End. Wits End combines furniture factory, gallery, studio, goat compound, and the creative academy, which Jake becomes a member of. Patriarch and grandfather, Zezadiah Applewhite, agrees it's a noble and socially responsible thing to do. Living individual, intense, creative lives, the adults have transmitted this attitude onto their four charges, so that the children are encouraged to self-design, be self-motivated, and follow their bliss, by default, really. Both adults and children are all so busily engaged in their own endeavors that an ordinary, mundane inquiry, like what's for supper, is met with glazed looks. Randolph, the father, who's a theater director, has forgotten to go grocery shopping this week, so it's bits of tofu dog, scraps of bacon, and beet tops, or whatever else you can scrape together to make a meal. It's a good thing that Lucille's guru friend, Ravi Govindaswamy, who comes for a visit and is also adopted into the family, is such a fantastic cook when he quits his fast. What I love about this book is that although it's a novel, it's better than most parenting books I've read, as far as giving me solid advice goes, and it's funny, which never happens with even the most alternative material. This book speaks to me personally in a way that no self-help book has ever done yet. It's my life, minus the self-doubt and angst. Reading about this crazy family, I can give myself permission to embrace my own crazy gang and see us all in a pleasing and positive light, adventurous, exciting, experimental, never boring. Live and let live is what's at play here. I like the motto on the banner across the wall at the Creative Academy. Education is an adventurous quest for the meaning of life, involving an ability to think things through. My 10-year-old stays in her room, a lot. To my distress, she never goes to bed before the midnight hour, and then only after a lot of threatening, cajoling, and begging. In the story, Jake has been with the Applewhites for months and has yet to set eyes on the oldest child, Hal, who's 15. A recluse sculptor-painter, Hal only comes out for foraging in the night, in the fridge, when everyone else is sleeping. Is anyone freaking? Is this a problem? No. No one is bothered or disturbed. I want to be that way. Cordelia lives in her leotard, creating and choreographing dances, the death of Ophelia being her latest. Uncle Archie and Zee are furniture designers, and mother, Sybil, is a famous mystery author. There's a youngest, Destiny, who never stops talking, is allowed to be. The fact is everyone is so busy in their own projects, nobody ever pays any attention to anyone else's projects but their own, cryptically spoken by Lucille. That they don't have interest, time, or reason for that matter to be in someone else's business. No wonder Jake's attitude and appearance doesn't faze them, to his great disappointment. There's an overweight basset hound, a crazed goat, and a foul-mouthed parrot that are also part of the family, and when an admiring visiting reporter comes to interview Sybil, but ends up staying to write about this artistic dynasty, the picture is completed. The important thing, though, is that when a crisis turns up, the family knows how to pull together. When Randolph's production of Sound of Music is in extreme danger of cancellation, everybody in the household springs into action to save the day. The entire family, including the mysterious Hall and all the visiting add-ons, work with a passion never seen by Jake to make the production happen. Jake had thought that he knew something about the Applewhites and passion, but nothing had prepared him for what happens when all of them at the same time become totally obsessed with the same thing. What had seemed like hard work before now looked like a sort of restful, happy holiday. Gone was any consideration of larks and owls. Work went on day and night. Sleep was relegated to a nap here and there. End of quote. Perhaps somewhat exaggerated for the purpose of the novel, this intensity and commitment for making a thing worth happen is a lesson to us all. Both Jake and Edie, who believes she is the uncreative dud of the family, have moments of self-revelation, discovering things about themselves through the process. Edie learns that her kind of non-creativity is valued by others after all, and most importantly by her own self, and Jake discovers his own talents. What gives you joy is a repeated lesson question asked by Z to a baffled Jake at the beginning of his misadventures with the Applewhites. Because once you know that, you will know what you want from an education, and you'll be able to set your own program. How true.
Boom, ain't it great to be crazy? Boom, boom, ain't it great to be crazy? Giddy and foolish all day long. Boom, boom, ain't it great to be crazy? A horse and a flea and three blind mice.
Money! Money McBean! It sells and sings anything in my path. Going to half to sell. Sell for any price you want. And there, going to buy it. To buy it. Sell it for more money than it's worth. Just sell it. Just sell it. Dun, 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 dun. Now we're in the kitchen. Here's a recipe box. I'll sell it. Here's a whistle. It's been used. You sell it for more than you get it for.
She got it from a birthday party. for free. Now she plans to sell it for $365.
You sell it what it's worth. You sell it what it's worth.
I'm going to sell some seeds, but they don't have any seeds in them. I'm going to sell them for $500. Then I'm going to get out of the city. She doesn't want to be arrested by the police. So, as soon as she sold her seed bag with nothing in it, she'll get out of town as fast as her little legs will get her. She says no one ever got rich being honest. Her saying is, you never get rich on being honest. Now take my advice. Cheat always. Always in your life. You should always be cheating to make money. Money! Why would you want to cheat and make money like that? You could get arrested. You could be sued. I could not. Now I have other problems to do. Bye. What will she do next? She's going to fill a Smart Puffs bag, and then inside the bag that says Smart Puffs on it, she's going to put Fluff. Then she's going to glue up the bag. Bingo, she sells it. Now we'll get the police on court.
That woman is horrible. What on earth is wrong with her? When I get her, I'm gonna pound her to smithereens. I'm gonna strangle the next person I see.
The policewoman is enraged. She wants to find her and get her into smithereens. Then in the housing market, she sees a huge advertised house. It says 365 rooms, a beautiful backyard. Flowers in neat rows. She goes and buys it. She goes inside. The house has one room, but many trick doors. It doesn't even have an attic or a basement. Just one room. But she's already bought it.
Someone's gotta pay.
She goes into the backyard. There's just a garbage dump in the backyard. Apparently, the person had taken a picture of somebody else's house that had 165 rooms and had taken a picture of somebody else's garden. The policewoman shrieked. She was enraged. She tried to sell it. No one wanted it. She was honest and said, a house of one room, backyard, garbage dump. No one bought it. The policewoman had to live it. There was no choice. And then she gets up and pounds around. Mad. Finally, she found the little thief strolling down the road. The little thief runs as fast as she can, but gets caught. She gets arrested for 3,000 years. So, we'll say goodbye to this show. It's done.
Movie review.
Matilda, you watched the movie. What do you think of it, Eva?
I love it.
It's wonderful. It's really a scream.
Good.
And it's about a girl called Matilda, and her parents are Mr. and Mrs. Wormwood.
Yes.
And they just don't understand her. She's really, really smart, but they don't understand her at all. They just don't think that she's anything special. They think she's just like, oh, yeah, yeah. They just don't pay any attention to her. They don't even know her age in the movie. It's like, how old is she? 4. I'm 6 and a half. Well, she ends up going to school.
That she always wanted to go to.
Yeah. In the movie, they made it because he wanted to have her pick up his parcels, but in the book, they didn't remember until they just neglected the idea, and they remembered later, too late for her age.
The movie's based on a book, right?
The book's by Roald Dahl.
And how would you say the book compared to the movie?
Well, I think I might like the movie more, just because the movie's more interesting than the book.
Really?
Yeah, it's just more powerful and just more dramatic than the book. The book is, it's just funny more, because that's how Roald Dahl is.
How about you, Madeline? Do you think that the movie compares to the book in a positive light, or do you think the book is better?
Movie.
Why, Bowman?
I'm not sure.
In that sense, I like
seeing things more.
I like to read books, so in that sense, I like the book more. So I really like to read. So in the way of excitement, the movie is definitely better, but it's more exciting.
Okay. They make more adventures of the Trunch Ball.
Yeah. Really?
Trunch Ball is the principal of the school. Agatha Trunch Ball.
Describe her.
She's a bully. I've been imitating her the last 3 weeks. Your mommy is a twit. And then there's a pair of high sweet. What poem would that be?
Okay. The poem is Bruce Bocktrotter.
He went to, well, the Trunch Bar had some cake that the cook made, and then he snuck in to the room where she had the cake, and he ate it. Uh-huh. And
what did she do? Did she punish him?
Yeah.
What was the punishment?
Well, she made all the kids come to the assembly room, and she made him eat. Like, he had to eat all this cake in front of the whole class. It was really gross. It was huge and chocolate, and he had to eat it all in one go.
You managed to eat the whole thing then?
Yeah.
Do you like the movie?
Yeah.
Do you think other people should watch it? Or is it a bomb?
I love the movie. I think other people should watch it.
What happens then? What happens in the story? No, you don't want to give the whole story away, but what's Matilda about?
She's got powers to make... She can make things move with her eyes.
And what does she use her powers for?
Bullying the Trunch Ball.
Yeah. She teaches the Trunch Ball a lesson.
Do her parents finally recognise her talents?
Kind of.
No,
in
not
the movie,
really.
But her mom kind of, but a little bit.
Father is an illegal car seller.
Car dealer.
Yeah.
Sells used cars.
Sells used cars.
At outrageous prices.
And
they're not very well done.
Yeah, they're not very well fixed.
Yeah. And you put sawdust.
Sells one to the Trunch Ball, and then she gets mad. And then since Matilda goes to the school, which is she puts her in the chokey.
Yeah, it's just in the movie, though, not in the book. Well, you can't tell you what the chokey is. It'll wreck the whole story. Yeah.
So read it. So watch it. So
read the book.
Watch the movie.
Like a bird, it flies around and around and around. Fly like a bird, like a bird, it flies around and around and around. Dance around.
I'm gonna wrap myself
and paper. I'm gonna daub myself with glue. Stick some stamps on the top of my head. I'm gonna mail myself to you.
Contact Radio Free School at grassroots@hwcn.org or mail P.O. Box 19, 1280 Main Street West, Hamilton, Ontario, Canada, L8S1CO.